KALW.
What we found is essentially shelter in place is working for those who can shelter in place.
A cutting-edge community testing program in the Mission has dramatic results.
And of those who tested positive, 95% of them were Latinx, and none of them were white.
Then we go across town to find Shakespeare in Golden Gate Park.
Along the fence there is the Eglantine roses.
What's an Eglantine rose?
Oh, I just found out what it is. It's an old tea rose. So it spreads, it puts out a very nice flower.
And we'll dive into more contemporary literature.
On the TV, another commercial for Inglés sin Barreras, and Lucía, La Tata, and I chuckled at the white people teaching brown people how to say, hello, my name is.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The COVID-19 pandemic is impacting everyone, but throughout the United States, Black and Latinx residents are getting sick and dying from this more than anyone else. Governor Gavin Newsom spoke to that disparity today at his noon press conference.
We have to be considerate of the socioeconomics and the complete disparities that continue to persist and are impacting people so differently, particularly in the Black and brown communities in this state. You see a disproportionate number, our Latino community testing positive for COVID-19 and in the Black community dying because of COVID-19.
Last month, thousands of residents of San Francisco's Mission District volunteered to get tested for the virus, whether they were exhibiting symptoms or not. The study was organized by UCSF and the Latino Task Force for COVID-19. It's a coalition of activists, nonprofit leaders, and city officials. The results were released on Monday, and they raise a lot of difficult questions about race and class in San Francisco. KALW's immigration reporter Teresa Katsourilis is here to break them down for us. So, Teresa, who was tested as part of this study?
Right. So, UCSF and the Latino Task Force, which is a coalition of nonprofit leaders, community organizers, and city officials, they managed to test around 4,000 residents in 4 days. This was a lot of work. It took a lot of volunteer man hours. Most of the people tested live in this 1 4-square-block radius. They wanted to focus on this one census area. And people were tested both for the active COVID-19 virus and its antibodies, which would show if someone got sick from this and then recovered.
Right. And since we're talking about race, what were the demographics of this study?
So demographically, the people they tested roughly reflect the Mission District as a whole. This is a historically Latinx neighborhood that's rapidly gentrifying. A recent report from the planning department found that 40% of Mission District residents are Latinx, and that's about how many Latinx people took this test.
Okay. And then what did the testing find?
So of the people tested in that 4-square-block area in the Mission District, 2% of them tested positive. And of those who tested positive, 95% of them were Latinx, and none of them were white.
None of them were white?
Zero.
Huh.
None of those tested had contracted it.
Huh.
No. And this is just the latest study to show that Latinx communities are being hit very hard by this virus. To give you just another statistic, 84% of hospitalized COVID-19 cases in San Francisco are Latinx people, even though Latinx people are only 15% of the city's population.
I mean, that's disturbing. Let's talk about why there's this wide racial disparity here.
Right. So to better understand this, I actually called John Jacobo on Monday. He's one of the founding members of the Latino Task Force and played a very instrumental role in getting this testing actually done in the community.
What we found is essentially shelter in place is working for those who can shelter in place. What the numbers we just released found, it was a little bit more maybe frustrating and maybe a little more painful than what I thought it would have been.
So the first thing John brought up was the racial and economic disparities in who can actually work from home. You know, another thing that this testing found is that 90% of those who tested positive said they could not do their jobs from home. Immigrants and people of color are disproportionately represented in essential jobs. And in this study, most of the workers who tested positive for the virus worked in food or beverage jobs or construction. The overwhelming majority of residents who tested positive also earned less than $50,000 a year and lived in households of 3 to 5 people. And John says this connects COVID-19 infection rates directly to the housing crisis.
The economic reality that your average family of four here in the Mission District makes $43,000 a year, and you have homes that are selling for $1 to $2 million a year, lends us to having these families be multi-generational and multi-people to a household. So instead of having maybe one or two people to a one-bedroom, you have 3 to 5 people to a one-bedroom, which is, you know, even how I grew up, right?
So then when someone does get COVID-19, it can spread more quickly in those conditions.
Exactly. Residents can also struggle to get healthy food in food deserts and access any kind of affordable healthcare, which can lead to diabetes or obesity, which are, of course, worrying underlying conditions for COVID-19 as well.
So, Teresa, what are some solutions? What can people do about this, or what are people doing about this?
Right. So City Supervisor Hillary Ronan, whose district includes the Mission, she says she's introducing legislation to address this. It would replace the income of any residents who need to stay home and are not eligible for unemployment. That way, immigrant workers may feel more comfortable quarantining if they feel sick. This is not a fleshed out plan yet. John Jacobo described it as building a plane and flying it at the same time, but they are working on some legislation. Essential workers can also register for free testing in San Francisco right now, whether they have symptoms or not. John Jacobo also says that, you know, because a lot of the Mission's Latinx residents can't work from home, people who can work from home and live in that community as well really need to help take care of their neighbors. They need to practice social distancing, keep wearing masks. Everyone should be following these guidelines to reduce spread to people who might be particularly vulnerable.
All right. Sticking with the message and hoping people will heed, I suppose.
Exactly.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Hannah.
Teresa Katsarilis is KALW's immigration reporter. You can find more of her stories at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We're going to take you now to a different part of San Francisco, to Golden Gate Park, where city officials have been encouraging folks to get some fresh air and exercise, of course, at a safe 6-foot distance from other people. Last week, Mayor London Breed announced the city would close the eastern half of John F. Kennedy Drive to cars and trucks, freeing it up for pedestrians, bicyclists, skaters, segwayers. And to celebrate, we're restarting the Golden Gate Park Cast, our audio tour of the park and its attractions. So let's go for a walk. The Music Concourse can be seen as the cultural heart of Golden Gate Park. This wide oval plaza is filled with fountains and framed by museums and the band shell housing the venerable Golden Gate Park Band. Now it's time to head out of this area to go to a place that's even more timeless. This is the Golden Gate Park Cast from KALW Public Media. I'm your host, Hannah Baba. We climb upstairs as we head south. Skateboarders love this area with all its open space and levels. Buses drop off folks heading for the California Academy of Sciences.
But we're headed around that building into a wooded area. You'll find people around here are often in a very good mood. And why not? It's beautiful and green, and there's always something nice to see or hear or smell. Back in the trees here, you'll find flowers from the writings of William Shakespeare growing.
What's in a name? That which we call a rose. By any other name would smell as sweet.
There's a garden dedicated to English literature's crown prince. You can easily miss it, but once you pass through the entrance gate and walk down a worn brick path, you're transported into an English garden filled with manicured flower beds, trimmed lawns, and people escaping the noise of the city. Jeremy Dalmas visited the garden.
Thanks, Tommy. Let me see if I can find it up here. I know a bank whereon the wild thyme blows, where oxlips and nodding violet grows, quite over, canopied with luscious woodbine, with sweet musk roses and with eglantine, there sleeps Titania, some time of the night, lulled in these flowers with dances and delight.
Joe Shemaleski is scanning a row of bronze plaques. Each one is stamped with quotes from William Shakespeare's works.
And that comes from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
We're in the garden of Shakespeare's flowers. It's an enclosed nook of Golden Gate Park that's filled only with plants mentioned in the writings of the Bard. Shemaleski is one of the park's gardeners, and he loves the flowers here.
Along the fence there is the eglantine roses.
What's an eglantine rose?
I just found out what it is. It's a great rose. It's an old tea rose, so it spreads, it puts up. A very nice flower, but then you just get this brilliant rose hip behind it. And so, yeah, it's very nice. Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so that's what that is.
This garden, though it's special, is not really unique.
This is one of several Shakespeare gardens throughout the country, and there are several others around the world. And they're all basically outlined the same way, 17th century classical garden.
Cleveland, Manhattan, Vienna, Johannesburg, all of them have Shakespeare gardens. Most of them were built in the early part of the 1900s. This one opened in the summer of 1929. And there's a reason why there are Shakespeare gardens and not Mark Twain or Hemingway gardens. Eric Anderson, the superintendent of Golden Gate Park, says that the Bard's work translates well to landscaping.
He mentions plants really vividly and really in depth in a lot of his works.
Do you have a favorite flower here? Or favorite tree?
To be honest, my favorite tree is the cedar here.
The tree stretches tall above the flowers, presiding over the entire garden.
It's a great specimen, and I suspect that it was one of the original plantings, and it's a really beautifully shaped specimen covered in Spanish moss.
Lauren Sabadin comes to the garden often. Today, she's lying on a blanket with an old book.
I was actually just reading my poetry book and trying to draw some inspiration and awesome. Do some writing.
The book that she's reading from is actually the same age as the garden, filled with poems from the early 1900s. She reads me part of her favorite one. It's called The Philosopher.
And what are you that, missing you, I should be kept awake as many nights as there are days with weeping for your sake? And what are you that, missing you, as many days as crawl, I should be listening to the wind and looking at the wall. I know a man that's braver man, and 20 men as kind. And what are you that you should be the one man in my mind?
That's so nice.
Yes, she has
Who
a crush
that?
On a philosopher. Edna St. Vincent Millay.
Beyond inspiration, Sabadin says the garden offers her a refuge.
It's my escape from the bustle of the city streets. Yeah, come down to just enjoy the beauty and peace and quiet. I love to read and write and nap down here. Catch up on my sleep a little bit.
You know, a part of the...
Shemaleski, the gardener, is getting ready to leave. He's about to lock up a set of steel shutters that enclose the bust of Shakespeare himself. It's a unique replica of a famous one from the writer's hometown in England. He's holding a quill and looking straight ahead, like he's posing for me. And there's an inscription under the statue. A gift to our city from the town of Stratford-upon-Avon and its former mayor, Archibald Flower, Oh, wow.
You know,
that's lucky that we got it.
Yeah, right.
Park Superintendent Anderson says they normally keep the statue locked away. Perhaps, back in 1929, you could have valuable busts sitting out in the open. But not so these days. In fact, if you look where there are supposed to be six plaques with Shakespeare quotes, today there are only four, and a couple of blank spaces. Those two plaques were wrenched off the wall in 2008, most likely stolen to be sold for scrap metal. No matter how tranquil it may seem here, we are still in the middle of 21st century San Francisco.
That story was told by Jeremy Dalmas. Subscribe to the Golden Gate Parkcast to listen to every episode in the tour. Find it at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors with spring book release dates have had to cancel launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so we are bringing them to you in this series called New Arrivals. Today's reading comes from San Francisco author Juli Delgado Lopera. Her bilingual coming-of-age novel Fiebre Tropical came out in March.
I'm going to be reading one of my favorite parts, which is the beginning of the novel. Y dice, chapter 1. Buenos días, mi reina y mi gran criolla here reporting desde los Miamis from our ant-infested townhouse. The broken air conditioner above the TV, the flowery couch, la tata half-drunk directing me in this holy radio novela brought to you by Fimo Sadness Incorporated. On the TV, another commercial for Inglesin Barreras, and Lucia, La Tata, and I chuckled at the white people teaching brown people how to say, hello, my name is, hello, I'm going to the store, hello, what is the swamp, please come rescue us. It was April and hot, not that the heat dissipated in June or July or August or September, even November for that matter. The heat, I will come to learn the hard way, is a constant in my. El calorcito didn't get the impermanence memo, didn't understand how change works. The heat is a stubborn bitch breathing its humid mouth on your every pore, reminding you this hell is inescapable and in another language.
That was Juli Delgado Lopera reading from her new novel, Fiebre Tropical. You can find more information on that book and more by local authors released this spring. Go to klw.org/newarrivals. Tune in tomorrow at 5. Bay Area residents have been sheltered in place for over 7 weeks. We'll hear how people are coping.
This is Joey. I'm a teacher. That is the garage door. It's 4:09 in the morning on a Saturday. We get up at 4 in the morning to make sure that we don't run into anyone.
Another installment of our Quarantine Diaries series tomorrow at 5. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Joshua Sorotiak. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.